podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. With Thanksgiving past us, I hope everybody had a very happy Thanksgiving and a good holiday as we move on into December. My name is Andrew Reich. I'm one of your co-hosts, and I am joined by my other co-host, Mr. Adam Murray. Adam, did you have yourself a nice little holiday?
This holiday is overrated, but...
Giving thanks to people is overrated?
You should be thankful all year round. B, you shouldn't just have one designated day to tolerate people in your family.
But yeah, it does feel a little bit forced. It's sort of like some of these NBA teams, especially the ones that they sort of like microwave together, like the Lakers, where they try to call it like a brotherhood, we're family, but it's like, yeah, but all we're doing at the end of the day, we're just trying to make this work so that we can be as successful as possible.
It's just you're a loose association of players who are just – there's no camaraderie, no team. It's just, yeah, we're all hired guns, essentially.
Yeah, does family feel like that sometimes when you go to those – when you visit your family or the other side of the family?
You go visit family, it's like, I don't want to spend $500 on a plane to go visit people I don't talk to, don't want to talk to. There's mm-hmm. no reason we couldn't all do this in August or February or July or just pick a random week of, hey, let's have a little picnic.
I just find it ironic that like one of the most enriching holidays, one of the more emotionally enriching holidays of the year, it involves you being surrounded by people you barely even know. I always found that funny, you know?
Yeah, and then everybody, you know, the day before, we're going to meet everyone from high school and in the bars and all.
Actually, we could use this as a really quick one to just transfer over to the weird dysfunction that's been going on with Golden State, talking about family. The only problem is this is a family that keeps winning championships, but just a few cracks in the armor, I would say. I mean, obviously, we're not even out of November yet as we're talking, so I guess it'd be too early to say, the sky is falling and such, but do you feel like there's a little bit of trepidation?
Can we just say that about all the NBA, sort of? It's just mm-hmm. sort of been a bizarro season. We'll start with Golden State, but just all around with let's just say Memphis being good or early Clippers
That's been the biggest shocker if you look at the standings right now. You know, the Clippers being 12-6, which would actually be standing at first place right now, or tied for first in the West. I don't know if that's necessarily surprising. We knew the Clippers had a few weapons in their briefcase, but for Memphis, I was very, very surprised at how good they've been.
They've been shocking and then efficient. And then, you know, we know Marc Gasol and Conley are good. But then all of a sudden, you know, Anderson has been a nice little complimentary to piece. And they're not even relying on the rookie and the young guys. It's just all, you know, Shelvin Mack came in. And all of a sudden, you had not Ben Ackmore. And just you have almost a team there, which is just strange.
Yeah, I mean, and also with J.B. Bickerstaff, because a lot of people just questioned what he was going to be capable of doing as a head coach, since he was an interim, you know, with the Rockets, and then he did interim work after Fizdale was fired, and the team didn't really seem to get better. So people, you know, they got different assistant coaches, and people were like, well, what's going to really change? You still got Conley, you still got Gasol's contracts, and you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. has been a very pleasant surprise. The Garrett Temple, Ben McLemore swap out worked like a charm for Memphis. That was almost a home run.
That's right. Garrett Temple has been, he's been quite efficient, and just, you know, even just, you know, Omri Caspi. It's like, well, okay, he's just, you know, he has his ring, and but no, he's been efficient, and just everybody that team just like they're playing together, and this, you know, they just beat the Spurs, which is like, well, that's never happening, but I digress. We're talking about the Golden State Warriors, and then the, you know, hey, last year they didn't look happy. They didn't look like they're having fun. oh, it's continued this year, and then now Draymond is just being more Draymond, and he's making himself worse and worse and worse, and it's, you know, yet then you're reading the, well, is he a max player? Well, money-wise, yes, but chemistry-wise, not really now.
It's been a couple weeks removed since we took about a three-week break between the episodes this time due to schedule stuff, but we didn't really get to, like, hammer out what we thought about the tiff between Kevin Durant and Draymond Green after the timeout in L.A. when there was a miscommunication where Draymond basically bumbled the last possession. Durant wanted the ball. And then they just got into a huge tiff on the sideline where everybody became professional lip readers on Twitter for about, what, 7 or 8 days? But it also led into Draymond Green's suspension. Now, that part was the one that really kind of resonated with me. Not necessarily the argument or what Draymond Green said to Durant. That stuff always is told, you know. That didn't bother me. What it was is that the whole idea that
for the sake of the team, he was sent home for the bit.
Yeah,
he got put
I was
in time
losing
out.
Track for a second. Yeah, that basically he was sent home. He was basically told – the owner basically made the decision, I'm going to side with Durant here because he's the guy that I need to keep in mind. And Draymond, you're going home. You know, yeah. That was very interesting. I'll just put it.
Which we knew was like, okay, you know, it should happen. It's going to happen. All of a sudden, now it's starting to happen. Their injuries are slowly creeping. They're not winning all these games like they're supposed to.
They lost four in a row. Yeah.
You know, once it's all said and done, they're eventually going to be on top, and it's going to be all, you know, much ado about nothing. But still, it's one of those like, wow, I didn't see that coming. Then Houston, just terrible at everything. Didn't mm-hmm. see that coming, and Oklahoma City started slow, but they're now back on top. Like we already mentioned, Memphis and the Kings, and just Cleveland has decided to the tank, according to J.R. Smith.
Would you call it tank for Zion yet, or is it too soon?
It's too soon.
Okay, because I don't know if we're at a point where teams are singling out one guy like a lot of teams did with Ben Simmons in the past and such. I don't know if we're at that far yet, but you know there are these teams like that are just actively terrible, like the Hawks and the Cavs and the Phoenix Suns, where you're just immediately thinking, oh, they have their eyes on one player, you know, if they win the lottery and get the number one pick.
I think it's just more in the dumpster for Dukies.
Okay.
Because they're going 1, 2, and 3.
I'm
pretty sure that's the case, but
we say that about Cleveland, but they rattled off two in a row just recently.
Well, Cleveland, they figured out what they want to do with the rotation. It was, you know, we're gonna, you know, we mentioned the Tyronn Lue thing, which I think we started the last one episode with, of his just immediate firing. And so, we want the team to be good. Then Kevin Love goes out. Then okay, well, let's just start playing the young guys. And it's like, well, it takes a while to get, you know, a rotation in a unit. And it doesn't help you shaking things up a week into it.
Yeah, so they won at Philadelphia, and then they beat the Rockets at home. Tristan Thompson's been putting in some work. Colin Sexton had his career high in that Rocket game. But a lot of that might just be like a whole lot of noise about nothing, since the team is probably – I mean, right now what they're sitting at, 4-14? I mean, what's their peak? Even if Love comes back and he's good, like that's not a team that's going to make the playoffs anyway.
That was just convincing ownership, like – look, you still have – you're paying luxury tax, but your team has really got awful. And
yes.
You should start, you know, reevaluating your pieces as opposed to, well, George Hill and J.R. Smith can make it work. Yeah, right.
I do feel like the bottom of the East is a little bit worse than the bottom of the West, but really it's not that far apart. Like if we bundled them all together and didn't discriminate by conference, like the teams are not that dissimilar. Like I would say like the Brooklyn Nets and the Dallas Mavericks are not that far apart.
Those are similar – those are similar teams now. They're not all like the bottom of the teams, like Atlanta, Phoenix, Chicago.
Now Ayton is putting in some work. He's starting to kind of climb up there in the rookie ladder. But
what else does that team have? You have, you know, I've seen Miles Bridges get it in the start. What's happening to Josh Jackson? He's
you're talking about Mikal Bridges. So
that's what I didn't
you
say.
You said Miles.
I meant Mike.
Miles is the Charlotte Hornet one. Yeah.
Yeah, McHale, he's starting. Josh Jackson isn't. The team has really nobody around Devin Booker. There's still no point guard. We mentioned, Cleveland and then Chicago, who's just terrible and had injury woes on top of it.
Yeah, now Chicago, obviously, with the injury woes, but Zach LaVine is still like he got red. He was red hot to start. He's still doing all right. And Wendell Carter is putting in some work, and I don't think we've seen Chris Dunn yet. I haven't caught too many Bulls games, but I still think Dunn is out, right?
He's still out.
Yeah, I mean, once he comes back, I think they might have a bit of an uptick. Jabari Parker, he's putting in a few points here every now and then, but it's really mainly LaVine leading the way there.
Parker's doing, he is what he is. He's going to give you the points, but he's going to give up just as many. And it's when you have Ryan Acordia is starting for your team, and you have,
They had a leading scorer against Boston in Shaquille Harrison. I mean,
Yeah,
was that bad?
Antonio Blakely is getting, double doubles, and that's not a good sign when your former G League call-up guys are getting your number one guy all of a sudden.
Yeah, we're not. I mean, we're barely into assignment territory with G League guys. Like, I just read that Troy Brown for the Wizards, just got assigned. We can kind of transition that over to Washington. I don't want to go out of my way and say that kind of their recent stretch that they've saved their season. I think they've saved their coach's job. I felt like there was a point maybe about 2 weeks ago where it looked like Scotty Brooks was going to go. Now, John Wall had an argument with Brooks where the ownership sided with Brooks and they basically sent John Wall home. I don't even know if he was suspended. Was he suspended?
I think he was just sent home too, and then you read reports of ownership is, like, okay, we'll quietly talk Beal and Porter and Wall. We'll offer them up for trades.
And trade offers, yeah.
Yeah,
This was right
granted.
after the Jimmy Butler trade to Philadelphia, which we'll discuss in a second.
Yeah,
But
our price will be insanely high, but at the same time, we're still putting their names out there all of a sudden. It's just the team doesn't want to play together. We just, like we said, just a bunch of hired people. Hey, we're on the same team. We both make a ton of money. We don't want to be a team. And then you hear rumblings. All the rumblings are coming from the bench because they're all 1 year players and are looking out for themselves. And well, Austin Rivers can't get money if John Wall and Bradley Beal are
Yeah.
hogging the
And
ball.
Kelly Oubre is a restricted free agent. This is going to be his chance to, make an impact. And if he's not getting the playing time, then obviously there's going to be a lot of a dissidence.
Yeah, and you can't do anything if Otto Porter Jr. is going to need to get 30 minutes in front of you. So,
Yeah.
and Morris is a free agent as well, I think. So
And we're
it's
not going to talk about Dwight Howard. We'll just say that the Dwight Howard experiment is probably over in Washington.
well, the Dwight Howard experience is kind of falling apart
He
everywhere.
had a 25-point 16-17 rebound game against the Nets.
No,
So it's not
because
like he disappeared.
You mentioned this, you mentioned this to me, and I figured now it's a good time to bring it up about old people in the NBA and how they're not around anymore, how like that early 30s group has just disappeared.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people classically, because of the Miami Heat with Bosh, Wade, and James, that's like the class of 03, I guess you could call it. But it goes a little further than that. You can go to probably into like dip into like the class of 06, 07.
07 was Durant
Yeah.
and
Yeah,
Horford.
Durant and Horford, and I'm trying to think of some of the other guys that were picked. Well, Greg Oden, obviously.
Joakim Noah.
Noah, yeah, Noah's out of the league. I don't know if he'll ever play in the league again, to be honest with you.
See, but the thing is, times have changed since you're like, well, where are all these guys then? They all have so much mileage on them. The class of, the freshman in 2003 would be a senior in 2007, but he has way more miles on him. So you have these 30-year-old, superstars who are breaking down at 31, 32, and the fall off is, look at how Al Jefferson just ran off the cliff because of just all the miles on him.
Yeah,
LeBron, yeah,
and
LeBron's
then
defying.
that was when one and done started in 07. So you got at least a year of college experience that's being tacked onto a lot of these players starting around 2007 and 2008. I don't know if that has too much of an effect because Russell Westbrook was a 2 year player at UCLA and he's still, I mean, Russell Westbrook's a freak. So
Oh, there's always going to be players who go strong. Just look at, you have Tom Brady and Drew Brees.
Chris Paul. Yeah.
Chris Paul, who's still putting, when Steve Nash was still going till
Mike
his late
Conley was
30s.
an 07 guy that we missed about. LaMarcus Aldridge with the Spurs is still putting in good work.
He's
So.
putting in, but he's slowly tapering off. He's beginning that taper off.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's just because, well, now Kyle Lowry is also that class as well.
Yeah, but that was a rare one because he was one of those late bloomer types where he didn't really get a lot of playing time his first 3 or 4 years in the league. You know,
yeah, his first years in Memphis and Houston.
I mean, if you look at the players of the week for the last 4 weeks, Kemba Walker and Nikola Jokic. The next one after that in October was Giannis Antetokounmpo and Steph Curry. Next one after that in November was Victor Oladipo, Russell Westbrook. And then, actually, this was a random one, Pascal Siakam in the East and C.J. McCollum. The earliest you can go for draft class is 08 and 09 with Westbrook and Curry. And Westbrook and Curry are like Hall of Fame talents. So, you know, it's just the way it goes.
And it's just the way the NBA had changed so rapidly in the past 2-3 years. Where, yes. you know, you have Blake Griffin, who used to be just, I'm going to dunk everything on you. Now, all of a sudden, he's like, well, I'm just going to shoot threes. And even all the big men have had to readjust their game. And all the small guys are now getting, you know, all the point guards now are mysteriously developing the Euro step. So it's times have changed so fast. And I don't remember the original point we were going on, but.
Well, we were just talking about how because of the fact that, you know, well, Dwight Howard's exit is for different reasons. But Carmelo Anthony was more of like a reality check of like, this guy just does not fit with our roster. We need to let him go so that our team can fit better. And maybe it's just a sign that players of that ilk that were elite players, you know, from that were drafted from between like 2003 and 2008, that, you know, their time is ticking, like time is running out for them.
Well, that, and also, well, look at like Vince Carter, class of 96, 95.
He just passed a scoring benchmark just recently. Yeah.
You know, people like him who are willing to age gracefully and take that bench role and then become the seventh man and become eighth man and become that teacher. It's a lot different than Dwight Howard, who still was like, I'm the number one option on this team. Carmelo, you know, he made Houston on the first week send out the starting lineups with him as listed as the sixth man in the starting lineups. It's just,
What did you think about the language of the press releases between the reports about the Rockets and Carmelo? It seemed a lot like Carmelo was just unhappy and the Rockets were glad to oblige letting him go. But it was very gently done, I guess, so that Carmelo didn't look like a bad guy. You know, because it was the reports came out of, you know, they're trying to negotiate his role, which is another way of saying, we're going to cut you. So.
Yeah, that's basically just the graces of being a superstar of, yo, we're just going to flat out cut you. It's just, let's talk about your future with this team. We don't see one with you in any way, shape, or form. Is there anybody you'd like to go to? Anybody we could try to trade you to? What, you know, it's a soft thing. The same thing with Dwayne Wade of just like, you know, you've done a lot for the NBA over the years. Well, it's not like LeBron James, you know, calling up his boy in Phoenix saying, hey, I need you to cut Tyson Chandler there.
Yeah. You talk about James Jones in Phoenix.
Yeah, GMJ. Hey, GMJ.
I never even thought of that. Yeah.
I need a center. I need you to cut your guy. you have no reason to. It's no benefit to you. You could easily just wait till the deadline and try to get a trade from. No, I just need you to cut him this week.
And you know what's so funny about the Chandler trade? Not trade, but when they acquired him, he had a game saving block literally like days after they acquired him.
Yeah, it was a putback or a block. He somehow won the game, and it was just like, this is just pure shenanigans. But apparently this episode has turned into the boat is slowly leaking episode.
Yeah.
Because we're just mentioning teams who are panicking all of a sudden. And in that case, I should bring up my beloved Boston Celtics, who I kept telling you and everybody else from day one, no, this team, I am worried about this team. This team can't rebound. They can't shoot. If they can't shoot, they're done. Oh, they're going to try to shoot themselves back in
the
game.
Well, their defense is leaking a little bit, talking about the leaky boats. The one thing that's kind of worrying in terms of trends with the Celtics is that defensively against guards, elite guards, they have had a lot of trouble. Everyone knows about the Philly game, but the game between Philadelphia and Charlotte where Kemba Walker just went absolutely insane, scored 60 points. But the next one after that, he went for like 40-plus on on the Celtics and the Celtics lost that game. Had a little bit of trouble with Trey Burke, I believe, right, for the New York Knicks.
And yeah, they have a problem with Trey Burke because we know Kyrie plays. He doesn't play the best defense when he doesn't want to.
No, he had a fantastic game though against the Toronto Raptors.
And then after that, you have Brown and Hayward. Both are threes. Small lineups are gonna have fits with them, and speedy guys, and they just everybody just wants to shoot threes, and you just watch them. They just don't look. There's no urgency in this team. There's no. And what sort of worries me is, you know, Brad Stevens is supposed to be a wizard. He hasn't found a lineup he likes yet. He's still tinkering.
What do you think of that Hayward lineup shuffle? For those that don't know, they decided to basically not start him for a couple of games. And now he's out with some ankle issues.
They need to remove him or Brown from the starting lineup. They can't have both. You need to have... Rozier has only been getting 18 minutes. Marcus Smart's been getting like 18 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, well, no, you need those two guys in. You need a traditional something. You need defense. And I had, you know, and everyone's like, this team sucks. Should I start panicking? Should I start panicking? Like, well, no, nobody cares till Christmas, but
it's too early for that. Yeah.
There is a quarter of the season's already done. There is a little leak in the boat.
Yeah. And they said a 10-10 right now. So.
Yeah, they're sitting at 500, and teams know how to beat them. They have given blueprints of, oh, this is all we need to do, and it's fairly simple. And that's my piece on the Celtics.
Well, and offensively, they're still somewhat struggling. I know the rebounding issues. Like, when you see these constant games where Marcus Morris is your leading rebounder, that's not good. You know, it's, you got to have at least a double-digit rebounder every now and then that could really be a force. Horford hasn't really done that yet. And Kyrie Irving, you know, Uncle Drew, sometimes have you gotten this sense with Kyrie? I mean, obviously he's coming off of a surgery, but he has these moments where he just spits out like this amazing stat line, and then he'll have a couple more games where he just doesn't really do a whole heck of a lot.
No, it's I could turn it on if I want to, but like I said, I just watch this team and just none of them are like seem like they want to, and there's no like, we can do it, but we have to work Hayward into the mix, and it's sort of, well, he's a little bit clunky right now.
Yeah, nobody, no fan likes the on and off switch because it means that a team that could potentially be great is just actively sucking, and nobody likes that. It's not fun to watch. You know, one team that really hasn't sucked at all is the Toronto Raptors and the Milwaukee Bucks. They're the ones that are sort of like not in this topic of the kind of muddled, you know, the sort of muddy area that we're talking about with Philadelphia and Boston, Detroit, Indiana, the Clippers, the Warriors even, because of the fact that they lost four in a row. The Raptors and the Bucks have sort of risen above it all.
Can I get a little kudos for saying the Bucks are going to be good?
I said that too. You're not alone.
I had to convince you though.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I see how this is, but they are sort of running away with everything right now, which really is meaningless because it's just, okay, you're getting way far ahead. We know you're going to come crashing down eventually. You know, I mean, when you have Pascal Siakam getting player of the week, it's just like, what?
Well, not only that, Kawhi Leonard's his effort has been terrific. Like, people expect his effort to be good. They just weren't sure how many games he would play. They weren't sure if his attitude would sort of rub off on the supporting cast. There was this one very shady comment with Greg Popovich. Did you see this? Where he said Kawhi wasn't much of a leader for us. Am I saying that right?
He wasn't the leader we wanted him to be.
Damn, that's harsh. I'm sorry, but that's harsh. Coming from Popovich, that's harsh.
Yeah, that, like I said, there was a very toxic situation they had down there, and I guess San Antonio's happy. They're sort of middling around.
They're doing okay. I just watched them in a pretty close game with the Bucks, and you know, and also the Pelicans scored 140 on them. So you know, we'll see. You know, the Raptors did have that 3-game losing streak. They lost. They lost at home to New Orleans and Detroit. And then they had the game against the overtime game against the Celtics in Boston where Kyrie went nuts. But they've rattled off four in a row since then against feeble competition like the Bulls and the Magic and the Wizards. But Leonard's still putting in the work. Fred VanVleet's playing really well. Kyle Lowry is putting in high assist marks basically every single night. And then the Bucks are just scoring like the Dickens. I think that's been the biggest surprise with Milwaukee, is that offensively they are just a machine. I don't know if all the credit goes to Budenholzer. I know that you have to give them some of it, but I think the players, that the young nucleus that they have there, is sort of kind of turning things around. And also Brook Lopez is sort of a revelation as like a stop and pop shooter.
It's well, he was, I told you, a great signing for them, but it's a lot different when you have a team with a real coach as opposed to, you guys are talented, go figure it out. Thonmaker, go in there for 10 minutes. We don't know what you can do. Oh, Giannis, you want to be point guard now? Okay, now you're going to be center. Whatever. It's a lot different when you have to find roles and define movement and, you know, watching the team gel. Almost.
What's the difference with Antetokounmpo, do you see?
He's just continuing to make another leap.
But do you think his positioning when they set up his when they set him up on offense, do you think it's really any different? Or do you think they're doing a lot of post play with him? I don't really see much of a difference there. I just see a lot more centralized offense around him.
It's centralized offense, but it's moving through him as opposed to, here, you take the ball, you go play hero ball, you make something happen.
And then you have a really good player like Chris Middleton that can kind of go off action and really make a team hurt by making open shots, because you can't leave Middleton open. So there's the trailer's going to Middleton, and now you got single coverage on Antetokounmpo when you're scrambling. And that's a nightmare. That's when you start having stat lines like when he had 33, 16, and 9 against the Trailblazers, and they scored 143 points.
Yeah, they it's just bizarre. moving on to some of the bizarre, the Pelicans have sort of just been middling around, and they haven't really shown what they want to be, have they?
Started hot, and then they had a stretch there where Davis took some time to heal some wounds, because the problem we've always had with Anthony Davis is very well known. He's going to miss about 16 games or more per year. It's just going to happen. You know, very rarely – he'll never play an 80-game season. You're lucky if you get 70 out of him. But anyways, they had a 6-game losing streak after they started 4-0. Then they had the win against Toronto, which was good. And then they had another 3-game winning streak with Denver and New York and beating up on the Spurs. And then they had that close loss to Philadelphia and a really ugly one against the Knicks where they had it won. And they gave up a chunk of points to, of all people, Emmanuel Mudiay and Alonzo Trier. I mean, that's scary.
It's strange.
You know, that's it. I think just defensively they've just been a little disconnected. Nikola Mirotic has been in and out of the lineup. Holiday has been fantastic all the way through. Julius Randle, too. It's just a matter of, is Anthony Davis healthy and is Nikola Mirotic healthy? Because if they're all healthy – and also they lost Elfrid Payton. Like the moment they got Elfrid Payton back, Elfrid Payton went back on the shelf. So that was another big problem, just lack of depth and
basically, just true New Orleans form.
Well, the problem is they do not have the capacity to have like reserves. Like they don't, like when Elfrid Payton goes down, you don't have a backup point guard to fill the role that he can fill. You know, it's just not possible.
You have the corpse of Frank Jackson.
Yes, and then if you lose Nikola Mirotic, that means you're putting more minutes in for Solomon Hill, and let's be honest, nobody wants that. So it's just been a little bit weird for the Pelicans. The Kings have been shockingly good. They were kind of an early story because of how hot they started. Buddy Hield's playing really well. De'Aaron Fox has made a bit of a leap. The one thing I found really fascinating was that very weird report that dropped all of a sudden that owners might be unhappy with Dave Yeager. Like, where the frick did that come from?
I think that's just rumors started by something else.
You think it might be Yorker's agent trying to get a better contract for him?
I don't know about that, or just, you know, other rival teams, rival agents trying to start discord, and, oh, well, maybe, you know, they'll shake up the roster and trade somebody. Because, you know, they have nice pieces.
It's a legitimately good team. At this point, I mean, they're at 10-9 right now. It could fall apart really quickly. Some of those teams that Boogie was on started out okay, you know.
Oh, they're going to start tanking soon. It's going to start falling apart as it always does, and they'll still be 25 and mm-hmm. and you know, whatever. But it's a good thing to say, like, hey, they're actually winning and they're trying hard. And you see, okay, Bagley isn't doing anything. And
Willie Cauley-Stein has been playing pretty well.
Cauley-Stein, heel, you know, Nemanja Bjelica, having him being a stretch as opposed to just a down low four has been a nice change of pace for that team. And it's good to have a good story coming from Sacramento as opposed to, they screwed it up again.
Yeah, that was the biggest nightmare with Sacramento. Like, you knew, like, you just knew that things were going to kind of fall through the cracks. Did they have a win against the Warriors, or did they just barely lose because Kevin Durant had decided to go off on them? I can't remember. I think they lost that game.
I don't remember.
It was just recently, but the one thing I do remember is that it ended with the ball wedged between the basket. The final shot wedged, which I don't think I've ever seen. I may have seen it a couple times, but not like that, you know?
Yeah, that was bizarre.
Not in a one-point game, so.
And then speaking of the bizarre, we can end this episode with just the weirdness that is just Philadelphia.
Okay. So, first of all, because we didn't really delve into the Jimmy Butler trade too deeply, what did you think of the trade?
I was back and forth of it as you had called me. It's like, oh, I got major news. I'm like, oh, I'm not paying attention to what's going on. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, Butler. I'm like, for what they were asking, it didn't seem there was no draft pick, which I thought was the whole precipice of it, was to have multiple first round picks.
Yeah, to tack it on, yeah, for value.
Mm-hmm. Getting two starters for him, one, you know, a prospect starter and just a decent, an okay player, that's a good haul for Minnesota because they have a bench. Philly, however, has now gutted their team to get Butler. There is nobody on the bench other than, you know,
when,
TJ
that weekend occurred, because it happened on a Saturday when they agreed to the trade. They had a weekend game, and they literally had nobody. Like, I think they lost the game. It was, but they basically had nobody to back up whoever they had, and it was a rough go for the Philadelphia until they brought in Butler. And like, they were waiting for Butler to come to town so that he could play the three. They literally did not have a three.
Like, they're waiting for him to play 38 minutes just so that, because they have nobody they could pay to back him up. And just,
I mean, he's putting in the work already. Now Joel Embiid is putting in the high scoring still. He like, Embiid is like an MVP for him right now. So they're winning games, obviously. They're at 13-8, and you know, I can't really point out, well, their chemistry is different. They had a little bit of a chemistry issue before Butler got there anyway. So and that sort of lends also to the whole drama behind Markelle Fultz, which is just so bizarre. Like, I can't even keep track of all the different news stories I've been dropping about, oh, he's changing his free throw stance again, and oh, the team doesn't believe in him. He's no longer in the plans. Now they're trying to trade him, and Markelle Fultz wants to be traded. And it's just getting extremely strange and sad.
And it's not his agent wants it. His lawyers tell him he should sit out and remain in this. It's like, what? Huh? He doesn't want to trade, but, well, yeah, obviously you as the agent would say he wants to trade because, you know, he's not marketable right now for you, but it's just the whole, like...
Well, I think it's also a bit of back and forth with, you know, Elton Brand, who's now the general manager for the Sixers. He was the one who just happened to be the GM when the Butler trade went down. Maybe it's just this very delicate balance where they're trying to get value for Fultz if a trade does come through or if they get a good offer. But deep down within the organization, they know that Markelle Fultz is a lost cause. Do you think that there is something there, or do you think it's just a situation where the relationship between – it kind of like Kawhi and the Spurs. The relationship between Fultz and the Sixers specifically is so toxic that it's probably better off that they just go their separate ways.
I don't even know if it's toxic because it's just so veiled in its secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a complete mystery where they're, you know, everybody's denying everything, and then all of a sudden, like, you know, there was like rumors of, well, did he get injured in like a motorcycle crash or something, or like everything is just all super rumors. They're like, well, no, nothing happened. He's fine. Everything's good. Everything, you know, just don't, nobody look over here. Everything's fine. Keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't think it's toxic. It's just, I don't think he's going to get a fair shake where he's at now due to that roster lineup.
I mean, I'm sure there's good fits there for him. You know, I was listening to David Griffin, and he said Miami, and actually, that might actually kind of work if they could actually pull that off. I just don't know if that's a good trade partner. You know, that's the other problem with Philadelphia. You already made a big move. You got Butler from Minnesota. Are you willing to dive in again, you know, when you're trying to win? But if you keep Fultz, you're basically saying we're trying to develop a guard while we're trying to win a championship at the same time. It doesn't work that way. This isn't – the Boston Celtics are only able to do that because they're so plentiful in talent that they can get away with it. The Sixers are not in that position right now.
And it's funny, you know, that's just the death knell of the process now that they've, you know, cashed all their chips in, which is what they're supposed to do.
That's what good teams are supposed to do. That's correct.
You cashed all your assets in. You got cashed all your picks. Now you have, you know, a top whatever player you think Butler might be. Top 15, top 20, top 10, depending upon, you know, everybody has their own opinion. But every year they've had like 7 draft picks and that they somehow nobody is on that roster.
Mm-hmm.
What does it say about your scouting department? You have 7 picks every year and you can't get anybody to fill out your bench?
Yeah. TLC didn't work out for them. Jonah Bolden's not turning over heads. You know, even the smaller ones that they've made down the stretch, I don't see Zaire Smith coming off the bench anytime soon. You know,
Zaire Smith's still injured. Miami hasn't had a second round pick since I think this decade.
Yeah.
But yet somehow all these undrafted G League guys are all coming in super productive, super good, super that. How come Philly can't get any veteran minimum guy to do anything on that team? That's just my question.
It's a good one, you know, but the only thing I could say is you could probably consider that one of the guys that they did develop that they held on to was traded away in the deal, and that was Robert Covington. So it's just the fact that they weren't able to develop a lot of the guys that they had, but the two that they were able to develop, Saric and Covington, they had to surrender in order to get Butler. So now you're basically having to start from scratch in terms of player development. That's the biggest problem. There's no system in place.
No, there isn't, and that's what I had said many times. It's just that you have this pipe dream of, well, more picks equals more lottery chances. Well, we got Simmons and Embiid, and let's just keep doing it. And there's no plan behind it. What good is your process? But that's just I think that wraps me up on the Philly thing.
Yeah, well, it's still strange. The thing that's weird about it all with the Sixers though is that they're still really good. You know, there's some teams where you make a big move like that and it doesn't work out. Like, it wouldn't have surprised me because this does happen with chemistry issues where Jimmy Butler comes in and they lose like 3 in a row. Well, you know, that didn't happen with Philly. They played fairly well when Butler came in. He fit nicely. Joel Embiid is still getting his. There is a little bit of worry, I would say, if you listen to the Philly critics about Ben Simmons' role and how it's sort of being muted a little bit because of Jimmy Butler being on the court. I don't see that yet, but I can understand why some people are worried about it.
I can see it happening come playoff time.
But what I'm saying is that the people who are looking, like staring down the minutes since Butler has started with Philadelphia and saying, oh, Simmons is his it went down from these last 3 games. I think that's reading into it a little too much. Like, we need a much longer inventory before we can really say, yeah, he's sort of hurting. He's sort of hurting what Simmons is good at. I can't say that yet. I will say this. The one thing that worries me about Minnesota, Karl Towns is back to his regular form, but Wiggins is still struggling. That's the one thing problem I have with that.
I don't think either of them are doing too good just watching their stat lines.
I don't know. Karl Anthony Towns put in some work a couple of times the last few games.
Couple of times, but then he's had a couple just, you know, pedestrian stat lines. Mm-hmm. There's the, you know, it's with ownership was thinking of sacking Thibodeau in the summer, so we know he's going to be gone at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of the players, I think, kind of know that. The only one in Minnesota who's really doing anything, ironically, is Derrick Rose.
Yeah, Rose is. I mean, people thought that 50-point game, it was like a lightning in a bottle type of thing. It's not. Like, he's put in tons of work. He had the game against Los Angeles. I think we may have already talked about that game, but he was incredible in that game. You know, and they lost the game, but he's put in some work. He's had 25-point games. He had, you know, high. He had some high assist marks a couple of times. He's I mean, I don't think there's a comeback player in the year of the year award, but I guess you could call him an MIP. Is that possible?
It's possible, but I wouldn't. I say it's too early for that.
Yeah, but I mean, but like you said, just to kind of like relate to the strangeness, like Orlando is not terrible. I watched them give a beating to the LA Lakers, you know, and they're not bad at all, you know. And that's a team that people just immediately marked off as like, oh, they're going to be terrible. Nikola Vucevic is still doing his thing. The Denver Nuggets are good, like expected. The Oklahoma City looks really good. That was very scary what happened to Hamadou Diallo. For those who didn't see it, you might not want to, but it was a very scary leg injury. What's shocking is that he must have gotten the good genes in his family because he did not break a bone or a ligament, which I do not know how that's possible if you watched what happened.
Well, then Caris LeVert somehow escaped serious injury as well.
Yeah, but I don't think he'll be back this year. That's the problem with LeVert.
They said he might be back. It's just a dislocated foot.
Man, that I just can't see it. Now, I do remember long, long ago when Jason Kidd broke his ankle and he was back in about 4 months. But, man, like the LeVert one looked really bad. I mean, we're just in this – it's just weird. We're in this weird stretch where we're just seeing a lot of gruesome injuries. We saw the one with the who's that UCF quarterback who had the really bad one with his knee. And then Alex Smith, you know, people calling it the Joe Theismann, and it's like it's just weird. Isn't it kind of almost like an epidemic where you just see really bad, like, leg breaks and bone breaks all of a sudden?
It happens in a quick swing.
Yeah, very
strange. Then all of a sudden, like, it just happens left and right, left and right, left and right. So is there any parting final thoughts here?
Luka Doncic is really good.
Well, there's a shock there, and people trying to say, well, oh, Trae Young, he's third in the league in assists, and he's not terrible. Well, because, yeah, Atlanta has said you do everything you want. They've just given him carte blanche, so it's not looking good.
Donovan Mitchell is not a point guard. I think we already knew this, but now it's becoming like a hot take because the Jazz are struggling, and people are pointing to the fact that Mitchell has low assist marks.
Yeah, and then sort of Utah's maxed out at the 3 and the 4. Inglis is.
Didn't they have just recently a really horrible, like a 50-point loss?
They've had a bad stretch lately. And then, you know, we said with Derek Favors, what is he giving you? And Gobert, his numbers have kind of gone down. His blocks have gone down a lot.
Yeah. It was actually Dallas who we just brought up. It was Dallas. They lost 118-68 in Dallas. Just ugly.
So really cheerful, easy stuff today, huh?
Nice awkward silence there as we play our way out. But now it's just kind of weird and complicated and confusing, and you know we'll have more of like a solid storyline going in. But it just feels like the whole NBA season does at this point. It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of clarity, a lot of cloudiness. But it's fun to look at the different happenings and the different results and try to make some sense out of it, even though it didn't feel like we did this week. But it's okay.
Oh, it's fun to watch the fires.
Yes, it does. Except for the ones in California, the real ones. Yes. On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Take care, guys. See you later.